I think that just as we're living in a nuclear age, we have grown so tremendously in scientific knowledge, it doesn't seem too much to say that men can begin to awaken to the fact that they haven't grown enough spiritually and haven't recognized their spiritual capacities.
Once something like eating is death, then you've struck at the very heart of life. The enemy of the older radical theories may have been the ruling class, but today the stakes of whether we will reform ourselves into a new kind of human being, a new kind of society, whether we will find selves worth being, the stakes of it are simply life itself.
Right, so I've gone through another relocate everything in my house phase. So, you know, the usual view of me sitting in front of a tapestry or whatever you want to call it might go away, which I'm sure people would not be too sad about. I wanted to remind people why I'm doing these sessions on personalism. This came out of discussions in the Morin Academy's communal reading group, which meets once a month. I think this month is our last month for sharing together our ideas from reading the Personalist Manifesto. And pretty soon then, I guess this weekend, we'll have to choose another book. And that's kind of how that particular group works. It centers on theology, maybe with a little bit of leaning towards political theology and adjacent ideas. And this is where Emmanuel Mounier's Personalist Manifesto comes into play. So today, like I promised that I would get, but well, I didn't promise, but I said I intended to get back into this issue of Mounier's treatment of the family, of women and the family. And so I'm going to do that today because I went back and I looked at it again and I found some more interesting aspects that I think are worth talking about. All right, so this is from the Personalist Manifesto. And in the spot where he begins to talk about women and the family. And I guess a big question that I have for myself is, do I feel comfortable with his treatment of the family and particularly of women? And last time, you should go back and listen to the other, I've done three of these so far. Listen to the other ones if you haven't already. You know, there are aspects of his treatment that seem really forward-thinking and I kind of inherently like, but then there are other aspects that seem too modern, too liberal, too completely make me happy, I guess. So the main thing I'm going to do today is just check, look at some quotes and discuss what he's saying here. So in this section where he's talking about the family, he says, like the person, the family is intimately bound up with its material aspects, its biological function, its social backgrounds, and its relations to the state. It is not, therefore, an accidental group of individuals or even persons. By its very essence, it is a given fact, an adventure offered to man by an imposed service and equally a restriction required of persons. Individuals must sacrifice their idiosyncrasies to it, even as it in turn must sacrifice its own for the good of society. Man, that's a packed paragraph. And there's a lot there that I really resonate with. The family is bound up with material things, such as its biological function, which would mean, you know, its role in reproduction of the means of life, right? Literally giving birth to life, and then, you know, maintaining and helping the people in the family grow. So that's its biological function, its social backgrounds in relation to the state. So it's embedded in the larger community and the state. So therefore, he's, you know, pushing back against the liberal social contract notion when he says, it's not therefore an accidental group of individuals or even persons. It's not just a contract amongst individuals who, you know, can do what they want and can leave at any moment or rearrange the contract whenever they want. So he says, by its very essence, it's a given fact, and it's an adventure offered to man. I really like that, right? It is an adventure, right? Whenever you get into a marriage, Lord knows it is an adventure, right? Because you're basically taking a plunge into the, I mean, you think you know, but you can never know. You can never know how it's going to turn out. You don't fully know the other person, and honestly, you never will fully know. Only person who knows, there's two people who know every person, right? Themselves, if they are self-aware and if they try hard enough, maybe, and God, and that's it, right? And so, in a marriage, people can come close to some knowledge of the other and should, but they will never completely know. All right. So it is an adventure. It is a risk. It's worth it. People take that all the time, take that plunge. So I like that characterization. It seems really realistic. And he says it's an imposed service and a restriction required of persons. So when you take it on, yes, indeed, you are imposed upon, so to speak, or it is then required of you to do things that you would otherwise not do if you weren't in that relationship. It restricts your choices, it restricts your movements. Individuals then must sacrifice their own idiosyncrasies to it. You can't 100% be your obnoxious self in a family without that, without pretty much guaranteeing you're going to have conflict. So the weird thing is, like, for a family to really function, there's only so much intimacy it can bear, honestly, right? And I think he captures that. It is not ever like a complete, union of two so that they become actually one. Okay, it's two people who are continuing, hopefully, to get to know each other and comfortable with each other throughout their lives. And then it also is an institution which sacrifices some of its own good for the good of society. So it's this larger, it's a social institution that is there partly to support society's mission of thriving and of doing that which is required to keep peace and order and create the context in which families and then persons within families can grow. So a pretty cool characterization there that I think shows that he very deeply has thought about the institution of the family. Now, then he says, however, one area of life remains untouchable. Persons and their vocations must never be sacrificed. Far from subjecting persons to itself, the family must be an instrument in the service of persons. It does not fulfill its function if it arrests the growth of persons, if it sidetracks them, if it holds them back on the road of life they have to discover. Okay, now this is a boy, is this a big ask he's making here? And it seems like so hard to imagine a society that embraces all that was in that previous paragraph, but yet embraces this too. Now, part of being a person as opposed to an individual for Mounier is that the person understands himself or herself in all those contexts and understands that the growth of personhood may come through the choices of subordination to some of these other aspects. So there is that. And yet there is this, sense in which, he is saying, like, the person is not so much sacrificing them for themselves for the family, but the family is for the development of each and every person. And that becomes particularly an issue when it comes to women for him, because he understands that in the relationship between men and women, especially of his time, that it was the woman who primarily was subordinating her personal development to the functions of the family, the biological, physical, emotional, this and that functions of the family. Okay, so he turns his attention to the married woman. And you know that he's puzzled before about how can women become full persons? How can they develop into the personhood that he desires for everybody, given the fact that they're in this subordinate situation? So he moves into it further here, and he contrasts his position with the Marxist position, which he's keenly aware of and he somewhat appreciates, but he differs himself from it in key aspects. And he says, "We do not side with Engels' view that the woman's emancipation demands as a primary condition the entry of all women into public industry." Now, Engels probably did say something like that. It doesn't really matter if that's an entirely accurate statement, though, because it's basically expressing that his understanding of the Marxist position is that for women to be emancipated, they all had to work in a public occupation. And he is saying no. Now, this gets us into the, feminist debates about what does it take to actually make women equal? And one feminist position is indeed that women have to work and make their own money as individuals in order to be equal to men. And that's a liberal feminist position as well, as I guess from his perspective, it's a Marxist position. So this gives me heartburn along with Mounier. I agree with Mounier on this. I've never felt comfortable thinking that women's equality should hinge on their ability to make money and be financially independent. Why? Because I don't like the idea of anybody's freedom hinging on that. It seems like a really shallow, low bar kind of criteria where, we're going to just accept that we really don't respect each other or love each other whatsoever in this society, and everybody has to fend for themselves. And so I've got to make money to force you to like respect me and my financial power or something like that. That's a sad and sorry state of affairs, is it not? So I agree with Mounier that equality generally, it's not good enough, although it tends to be, practically speaking, the case, but it doesn't seem morally good enough to say that. It seems as though you're ceding a great deal of territory to a very realistic notion of human nature and what marriage could possibly be. Okay. And then he goes on to say, we do not hold, that is, personalists do not hold either, that there is any special indignity attached to household tasks. Furthermore, it seems to us ridiculous to hold that in a union of love, there is something intolerable in a woman's being dependent, if need be, on the earnings of her husband. Okay. I agree with that. I think that in Western society, partly because it has been male dominated, and partly because it has adopted capitalism as its economic system very strongly. There has been an indignity attached to not only household tasks, especially household tasks, as sort of like just second rate and certainly not to be compensated, but also to like mundane tasks generally, manual tasks, tasks involved in reproducing us and keeping us alive. Weird, because like staying alive is should be our paramount concern, and even the liberal theory would say so, right? That like survival and comfort, these are the most important things in life. And yet the people who provide them, whether they're women or farmers or mechanics or carpenters, builders, whatever. Their labor is seen as less worthy. And the woman's in the past has been seen as less worthy than them all because she didn't make any money. And that Mounier is recognizing this, right? And he's saying, seems ridiculous, especially in a relationship that's supposed to be about love, to think of it that way. He says, but the trouble is that love is not always present. and that it does not solve all difficulties. The fact that many marriages of both upper and lower bourgeois strata are entered into precipitately and end in shipwreck is due to the further fact that bourgeois education condemns the young girl to expect from marriage both her material and her spiritual substance instead of raising her up in her own person. I read here that he thinks that marriages go awry and either dissolve or are just bad marriages because women are told that they need to expect everything from the marriage, then they become dissatisfied because they haven't achieved fulfillment and feel subordinate. And now I think you could apply that to both men and women now, you know, like to think of marriage as the primary and maybe sole vehicle for your social life, your personal fulfillment is placing way too much of a burden on the marriage and is likely to lead to, as he would put it, shipwreck. Okay. But he's focusing on the woman here because, in his mind, you know, the man has outlets. At least the bourgeois man has outlets. He can go into society and do things to develop himself. All right, he says, if woman is to have a guarantee of independence from economic pressure in her choice, a fundamental condition is that every young girl be educated to some remunerative activity, some activity that pays money. Okay, now here's where I really get uncomfortable because basically what I hear him saying is, okay, yeah, now we've talked about the ideal, but now let's get realistic and realize that most marriages and most people think in these more liberal terms, and so they're never going to like actually practice love in these relationships. And because of that, it makes sense to make sure that every young girl can make some money, okay, and can have that outside occupation at least part-time in order to achieve what she can't achieve in the marriage. Okay. He says the coming of a child generally makes such exterior occupation impossible, but legislation and professional organization should still make it possible for the woman to maintain a salutary contact with the outside world through half-time or quarter-time occupation or some kind of charitable or benevolent work. So here he's bringing in legislation and organization should make it possible for women to have this outside work. Okay, so society is going to make sure that every young woman has some sort of training to make money and is going to create the conditions in which she can do it. I don't really have problem with the social aspect here. This is, I mean, some people might be like, oh my gosh, I don't want the government to be involved in making these kind of guarantees. I don't really have too much of a problem with that. I just have a problem with the fact that the government, when it makes these kinds of laws and guarantees, is setting the moral tone for society. Government always sets the moral tone, even a liberal government, any kind of government. We learn what we should value from our laws and from our institutions, for better or worse. And so to institute this kind of thing is to, in my mind, it's to teach people the wrong lesson. Even though maybe it's the, I mean, he's probably thinking it's the best we can possibly do under the circumstances, and maybe he's right. But it is teaching people the wrong lesson, which is that what he just said, love is likely not to actually prevail. We're not going to actually be able to respect each other. We need to make sure that women are respected. And the way to do that is to have them sort of separate themselves from the family, and, you know, achieve some sort of pay so that they can assert their financial power. So we're kind of back to that. And then finally, he says, she should have her own salary if she stays home full time. Okay. She should have her own salary taken out of her husband's if she stays at home and manages the household. You know, for the time in the 1930s and 40s, a really forward-thinking idea. It would have to have been enforced by law, and I think he would be comfortable with that. It would have made it likely that women would have had more respect than many of them did in marriages. And yet again, basically, we're saying that money is the measure of respect, and that by paying people for these very, very important tasks within the family, we are going to force people to respect them. It'll be interesting to hear what people think in the comments. I can't totally criticize it because I'm sure he's right, and probably society would be way better off. Even better would be to like pay people who want to stay at home, men or women at this point, some sort of basic income to do so from the state. Because it would save us taxpayers a lot of money if people could have like decent homes where everybody was taken care of and where the person doing that kind of work was respected and happier. Think of all of the health problems and financial problems and emotional problems that lead to divorce, and then all of the repercussions for society of that, of broken homes, and the loss of the functional household where people actually are taken care of and supported is huge for society. It's costly. It creates turmoil. So, even though it makes me queasy, I mean, he's on to something here, that we need to respect this work, that a big part of our mistake was that we never did respect it. Maybe because it was done by women, or maybe we didn't respect women enough because they did that kind of work, which is maybe more likely. And yet it is the work and the substance of life itself. And now we've substituted, microwave meals and McDonald's and full-time childcare for it. Now, I'm not saying that everybody would choose to do this, and we ought to live in a world where people can choose whether or not they want to stay home full or part-time. But we should live in a world where people can make that choice and are encouraged to make that choice, and maybe even share it, men and women, and to not stigmatize it either way, but respect it and honor it. So there's a lot of food for thought here. I don't, I guess I'm saying I don't know if Mounier goes far enough for me to be super happy, but then again, he's dealing with the real world and what could possibly actually happen. And even what he's asking for seems utopian. So I'll leave you with those thoughts. I still have more to say. He has quite a bit more to say, and so I will have more to say about the Personalist Manifesto, but I hope you enjoyed this session, and I'll see you next time.